This is the State of Things from Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. The North Carolina Innocence Inquiry Commission believes a Winston-Salem man may have falsely confessed to a role in a homicide more than 30 years ago. Merritt Drayton Williams implicated himself in the death of 65-year-old Blanche Bryson. The commission reviewed his case and found sufficient evidence of innocence to merit a judicial review. Another man has since confessed to that crime and claims he did it alone. Williams is currently serving time for other felony convictions, but his case raises important questions about why police believed his initial story. Winston-Salem Journal Legal Affairs reporter Michael Hewlett has been following the story and joins us now. Michael, welcome to the State of Things. First, I suppose we should learn a little bit more about Merritt Drayton Williams. Who is he? And perhaps then you can tell us about the crime that was committed 30 years ago.
So what we know about Merritt Williams is that he has a history of mental illness. He has a compulsion to make impulsive decisions that sometimes don't make sense. It's hard to kind of talk about this case without talking about another case that the Innocence Commission also reviewed. So they reviewed two cases. One is an Arthur Wilson and then Blanche Bryson. Arthur Wilson was killed in 1983 after he left a drink house in downtown Winston-Salem, well, in Winston-Salem. And police believed he was beaten to death. There were witnesses who saw three people beating him and searching through his wallets. But there was no one who could identify who did it until Merritt Williams started talking in 1986. And in 1986, he was already in jail for killing a woman named Murray Smith, who police say he pushed down a flight of stairs. She died several days later. And so he starts talking about Arthur Wilson, and he starts talking about Blanche Bryson. Blanche Bryson was a 65-year-old woman. She was found strangled to death in her home. Somebody had broken into her home, ransacked the house, stole her car, and killed her. And in that case also, police made no arrests until Williams started talking. And so in the Bryson case, Williams didn't really say that he killed her. He just said, well, I was there, I participated in the break-in, and he starts naming several people. And police investigated it. They tried to match prints. They couldn't find anything, but they found enough to get him convicted of first-degree murder and give him a life sentence. And then no one else was ever convicted until another guy named Robin Carmichael, a year after the conviction, comes forward and says, yeah, I was there. He has costume jewelry that was stolen from the house, and the police verified that. And he points to this other guy who drove him there, this guy named Duren Johnson. So Carmichael gets convicted. They talk to Duren Johnson. Duren Johnson says, I didn't have anything to do with it. Case closed. So you have two men in prison for this murder. And this Duren Johnson, we investigate him. He said, no, we leave him alone. 30 years later, the commission is reinvestigating this case because Williams was saying, I had nothing to do with it at all. And they talked to Duren Johnson for the purpose of getting a DNA sample. And he just starts confessing and says, yes, this has been haunting me for years. I killed her. I was in the house alone. And oh, by the way, I don't know who this Merritt Williams guy is. He knows Robin Carmichael, but I don't know who Merritt Williams is. And when they talk to Robin Carmichael, he also says, I don't know who this Merritt Williams is. And then the big twist is they get his DNA, they test it, it matches DNA found on nail clippings from Blanche Bryson. So you have this other guy who says, I don't know who these other guys are. Johnson says, I don't know who Merritt Williams is. Robin Carmichael says, I don't know who Merritt Williams is. I committed the crime in the house alone.
All right. So at this point, and again, no material evidence linking Williams to the crime initially, only his own testimony, a confession, that he was in the house.
In the house. And then he said that when he went to the house, he had toboggan hats. And they there were some strands of hair that were found on the hat that they said, well, that could have come from Merritt Williams' head, but that's not a definitive. It only maybe corroborates his statement, but it's not like DNA.
Now they've got DNA evidence that will convict a man who confesses, says he did it alone, and says he does not know one of the people who had implicated himself. That's Merritt Williams. What does law enforcement do at that point? What does the court system do?
So Duren Johnson was arrested. He's charged with murder. That case is now still pending. But what's interesting is that the DA's office says we don't even dispute the fact that, you know, we have Johnson's confession, his statement, we have this DNA evidence, but it does not mean that Merritt Williams is innocent. And so they say that somehow Williams' statements were they contend that his statements were consistent, that he testified under oath in court. Even during the sentencing, he apparently apologized to the victims. And that Johnson was on LSD at the time of the crime. So he doesn't even remember that Merritt Williams was there, that they could have broken into the house and went their separate ways, and then Robin Carmichael comes into play. Now, the problem is that Merritt Williams never identified Johnson as his accomplice. He identified several other people as his accomplice and then said, no, those are not the people. Then he comes back and says, no, it's this other guy named the lieutenant. Then when he gets sentenced, he says, well, no, it's this other guy named George Thompson. And then the DA tells reporters, I don't even know if this guy exists at all.
So we're hearing all of this and saying this is not a terribly reliable witness, particularly against himself. But apparently police were saying the same thing at the time of the investigation.
Yes. And what experts will say is that, yes, certainly you will have people all the time who will come in and voluntarily confess. What you have to do to verify is, are they telling you information that no one else knows? That, you know, information that has not been publicized. And the commission said, you know, there are a number of stories out there that included information about, yes, she was strangled, she was found with a lamp cord around her neck, her house was ransacked, her car was found in a particular place. Williams tells the commission, there are details that I picked up from news articles, there are details that I picked up from neighborhood gossip. The reason that I told the police that I stole lampshades is because they said, well, you had to have stole something, right? You had to stole, I mean, you say you're participating in this home invasion. How could you go into this home invasion and not steal something? It's like, well, I stole lampshades. Well, he said he stole lampshades because he had lampshades at his house.
And police at the time were warning, in fact, the district attorney that, look, I don't think this guy is reliable. And they
not necessarily the DA, but there was this retired assistant chief, Michael McCoy, who told the commissioners that he told his detectives, he was a sergeant over the homicide division, he told his detectives all the time, don't really trust anything that Merritt Williams says. He's a compulsive liar. He lies to benefit himself. But yet, the police did depend on Merritt Williams. And it could be, as some experts will say, confirmation bias. So police have this particular theory about the case. And then somebody comes in and then confirms that theory. And they don't really, and they have tunnel vision and don't listen to anything else that might contradict their idea of how this crime happened.
Forsyth County District Attorney Jim O'Neill expressed frustration in this whole process. In June, he said, quote, I hope this case and the defendant who qualifies under FBI definition of a serial killer will serve perhaps the most egregious example as to why the legislature must act now to review state-funded innocence commissions. So in his mind, it's the innocence commission that's at fault here and should be put on trial and not the prosecutors or the police, who perhaps should have known better.
And one of his arguments is that when prosecutors go to trial or there's a plea agreement, there should be a finality to the process for the victims, for the victim's family. So, you know, the victim's family goes through this whole process, whether it ends in a plea agreement or it ends in a trial. And it's like, well, that should be it. There should be closure for that family so they can move on and not have to come back 30 years later. And there's all this doubt about that particular conviction. Interestingly enough, the Innocence Commission was created in 2007. They get 2,700 claims of innocence in that time. And out of all of those claims, there have only been 12 people who have been exonerated through that process.
Michael Hewlett is legal affairs reporter with the Winston-Salem Journal. I have one quick question for you. What's the next step in this process?
So the next step now in the Blanche Bryson case is that there will be a panel of three Superior Court judges chosen by the Chief Justice, and they'll have a hearing sometime next year. And that's when they will decide, those judges will decide whether or not Merritt Williams eventually gets exonerated.
Michael Hewlett, legal affairs reporter for the Winston-Salem Journal. You can find links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
There's more of the State of Things just ahead. Revisiting North Carolina history, but first, the music of Barry Gray. Barry Gray.
Train running through my chest. Don't wanna be like all the rest. Have to make my footsteps heard. Can't just walk around, one foot on the ground. I've got to make my footsteps.